Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play dude.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
It's toy department time, Matt Kolsky.
Woo!
Feels weird that we're actually doing this at a normal time this week.
Wasn't it just like 1 week away from normal time? What are you talking about?
I don't know. It feels like it's been more than that, but, you know.
Okay.
Lots happening in the world, right, man?
So, you say so.
So, I don't know. Time and space. You know, time and space disappears.
Big
show this week. We've got plenty to talk about. The NBA is back. We'll do that at the end of the show. So, if you're not a sports person, don't worry. We've got plenty of entertainment content for you. And then a ton of homework. I think we're kind of fired up about this week's homework. Where do you want to start this week? What was the? I guess we should probably start with Watchmen, right? That's probably the buzziest thing happening.
Yeah, I think that's right.
You know, before we get into it, what is your background with the Watchmen IP franchise? Did you see the movie? Did you read the comics? You know,
I mean, I don't think I've made it through the whole movie. I've like seen bits and pieces. I have zero sense of what the narrative of Watchmen is, other than after I watched the episode, because I mean, I'm not saying this as a bad thing necessarily, but I was damn confused, and
it is
so much was going on.
Yeah, it's highly confusing, right?
Yeah, I mean, but not, I mean, I don't know that you can be confusing in a good way, but it's not confusing in the worst way.
I mean,
it's
I
just
get what you're saying. It's obtuse,
lot.
Right? Like, it's intentionally confusing, right? Like, they're not.
I think
yeah,
so.
You know what I mean?
I think so, yes. And so I watched the little 3-minute watch comic book fans explain the narrative. So I have like a 3-minute basic idea.
I think I'd rather punch myself in the nuts than watch comic book fans explain the narrative of Watchmen.
It's pretty good. There's a lot of fast cuts. Nobody gets to dig in.
Okay, good. So yeah, I mean, as you can tell, I have very little interest or patience for the general mythology of the series. I'm here for Damon Lindelof and this cast.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, if you're here for like the darkness and death obsession of Damon Lindelof, like, I think you're probably satisfied for now, yeah?
Yeah, no, I'm not unhappy. No, I had to watch it twice just to really understand what is going on. You know what I mean? So
And what would you say that is, just in case? Not that I don't know.
Yeah, okay, so the events of this, right, are taking place 30 years after, I guess, the comics. And
alternate timeline
of
reality.
It's an alternate timeline of reality. It's you're in Tulsa, Oklahoma. There's been this sort of war, and the police have to like wear masks and sort of police in secret, and they're battling a white supremacist collective who are using some of the iconography of some of the original iconic Watchmen as characters. There are sort of people who seem to be kind of superheroes and, you know, superhero vigilantes and have powers that are battling these folks. And then there are just sort of people who are regular cops. And
are there people with powers right now?
It sort of seems like, doesn't it sort of seem like Regina King has some powers?
Like, other than the power of being a badass, I'm not sure that she's in, like, it's, she's supposed to be a supernatural person.
You're not seeing them, but I don't know. Like, I sort of felt like when she takes that dude in that room, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think that those noises are just a function of her being super good with her fist. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, really? That's what I thought.
That was sort of the vibe I got, that she was special. You know what I mean? Not just because she's wearing a costume, which, you know, she is a fair amount. But I could be wrong about that. Like I said, I don't know either about the comics.
Well, and is this, like, I'm not sure this is canon.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Well, I mean, it's canon in that it's in, right? It's part of this world.
Well, maybe it's canon now, but I'm not, I don't think knowing the comics would necessarily tell you whether Regina King has powers.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's hard for me to say because I don't know the comics.
But there's nothing overt about anyone having powers, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it almost seems like the superheroes are dead sort of origin.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like they kind of gone into hiding.
Uh-huh. They're not here helping anyway. There's nobody like showing powers in public.
Yes, correct. Yeah, everybody's doing it in secret. So. Yeah, and then, I mean, obviously there are some other things that happened in the episode. There's a lynching and some other stuff. So,
an actual lynching, not,
yes, not a metaphorical lynching, an actual lynching. Yeah.
Yeah.
Although white guy. So, hey.
Yeah. Fun twist.
Shouts to Don Johnson.
Yeah. Don Johnson, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to know if he's going to continue to be involved as like a flashback character or something. But if not, heck of a one episode turn by Don Johnson.
Yeah.
He's matured into like an interesting character actor somehow.
I was legit bummed at the possibility that he might not be on the show.
That said, let me say this. I don't loathe the comic book genre as much as you. And so that doesn't turn me off at all. In fact, it kind of is part of the appeal for me. Also, everyone loves, people who like comics love this graphic novel, which seems like a good thing. And I love Damon Lindelof's work, and this seems very on brand for him. And even if none of that was true, I think I could watch Regina King kick racist ass for at least one season.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm not going anywhere, for sure.
So, like, this is, while very confusing, like, I am as interested and positive feeling about this as I could be about something that is so confusing.
Yeah, I would say that. It's another, by the way, I don't know. I'm getting tired of saying this almost about TV, because it really does happen all the time now, but it looks amazing, And it has that Lindelof sort of look and lighting. There's a lot of just sort of like a lot of the visual feel of The Leftovers is still there. You know what I mean? There's this
and
whole
the emotional feel. I mean, it's a horrible alternate timeline world.
Yeah,
where like nothing is safe, nothing is okay. Here we are, Damon Lindelof's playground.
Yes. I'm here for this whole Jeremy Irons, who the F is he, what anniversary is he celebrating, and what does he have to do with all of this? Right. You know what I mean? Like that sort of thing.
Yeah, that was just one random scene with Jeremy Irons being an odd old man. Okay. Yeah,
sure.
All right.
Yeah. So, like, it seems like the comic, knowing nothing about the comic book, the impression I'm getting from watching this show is that it seems stuffed with some interesting concepts and characters, you know what I mean?
Yes. I have an interesting question I want to ask you based on something that happened, I think, last week on the show. I should look. What did we talk about last week on the show? No. Maybe? No. May have been the week before. There was some week where you were like, yeah, but I don't think my mom would like it, or something like that. You remember? Do you remember what we were talking about?
No.
I thought that might be an interesting barometer.
Whether my mom would like this?
For things like this, like for both of our moms, because whatever you said gave me the impression that our mothers have a similar taste that like mostly aligns with ours, except for when we enjoy things that are, and tell me if I'm wrong, that are either extremely like stupid or disgusting in the comedy world.
Well, my mom just is flat out on half hour comedies. So,
okay.
Yeah.
What about
stupid or smart?
Okay. And what about like violence?
Limited tolerance for violence.
Right. So I think our moms are in a set. My mom is not full out on 30-minute comedies, but like she's not interested in dumb or disgusting stuff.
Yeah.
So even, you know, something like Silicon Valley, even though it's like relatively smart, dumb stuff, it's still dumb stuff. Like that's probably not her favorite. Anyway, do you think your mom would like this?
I think she might. Yeah.
Cause like, I bet she liked The Leftovers, right? But this is like The Leftovers on something.
Yeah. I'm not sure I remember where she was at on The Leftovers. All right. Well, we'll do it. I'll do a check in with mom during the week. So we'll figure that out.
I wonder if my mom could dig this.
Yeah.
Like there are some things that are like, yeah, it's interesting and dark in a curious way. And there are other things that like, it's real violent.
Yeah. I can definitely see some stuff that would appeal to her and some stuff she might not be interested in. So
right.
We'll see.
Right.
I did want to mention the Trent Reznor Atticus Ross score.
Of course.
Is killer. And how wild is it that guy, like, I did not envision a life for Trent Reznor of, like, being, like, ace movie scorer.
Trent Reznor and Johnny Greenwood maybe are the most interesting.
Yeah. You know, and maybe I should have. But, like, look at, you know, what a cool way to kind of, like.
Well, for both of those guys, it's like, of course. And yet I never could have seen it coming.
Yeah.
Right? Like, go back and listen to the Downward Spiral, and it's like, oh, of course this guy became a tremendous, like, scorer of dark films, you know?
Indeed. By the way, I'm lost on a Wikipedia hole, but you know there are all these references to President Redford?
Yeah. Is it Robert?
So there were some reports that Robert Redford was going to play himself, which apparently turned out to not be true. But the use of Redford is a tribute to the comic, where it suggested that Redford was positioning himself for president much the same way that Ronald Reagan became president, which I think is kind of interesting.
That happens in the comic?
In the comic, yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
And it makes it sound like President Redford gave reparations.
Yeah, sure does. gave something that someone would sarcastically call reparations.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Right, right, true. I wonder, God, how cool would it be if he did show up as himself, the president?
It would be amazing. It would be amazing.
Oh, man.
What I like about it, too, is that it's just plausible enough that he would do that. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't.
Like,
that doesn't
like
seem
he'd
that,
actually try to be president.
Yeah, like that doesn't seem that far beyond the realm of possibility, right? So
no, I think that's a great twist for the. I am kind of interested in this graphic novel.
Yeah,
I might get it.
Yeah, well, there are only like 12 issues of it, from what I understand.
Yeah, I don't think it's huge.
So
I'm sure I could just get a book with all of them.
Yeah. All right. Well, let me know how it is, because I won't be doing that.
It'd be the first graphic novel I've ever read, so let's not hold our breath.
I also like that this show's made in Atlanta, and I can't tell at all.
I can't tell if you're being serious.
I'm being 100% serious. Usually, you know, I mean, I have so much stuff shot in Atlanta now, I recognize a lot of stuff.
You're actually happy?
Yeah, I sort of like it. I think it's cool.
Okay.
I didn't say it was important. I just thought it was cool. all right. Let's talk about living with yourself. How's that?
Yeah, let's.
Did you have more thoughts on Watchmen?
No, I think I think I'm good.
Okay. So, Living With Yourself is Paul Rudd, and also Paul Rudd, and Tom Brady, and...
Tom Brady's appearance was excellent.
I can't believe that this... I mean, I get it, but I just... It's so annoying that this thing was, like, a controversy for half a second.
How so?
Well, because...
I miss a lot of this dumb garbage, thankfully.
Because Tom Brady, is obviously in it very briefly, and when he is, he's outside of what appears to be a rub and tug.
But it's not.
It's
we
not.
Know it's not.
Right, exactly. It's not. If you watch the show, it's not. But I think some people who maybe didn't watch the show made a thing out of that, given the Patriots' other issues with rub and tugs.
I like that. That's funny to me.
Yeah.
Also, a funnier thing to get upset about would be the TB12 method. Like, a funnier controversy would be, oh, he's outside a mysterious, like, cloning place? What does this mean?
Yeah, I agree. I did think that, once you understand, like, what's happening in there, it's weird because when it's not necessarily funny at the time because you don't know what's going on, but when he says he's been there 6 times, like, retrospectively, that becomes very funny.
Yes, totally. I mean, I got that immediately. And he smirks at him, like, yeah. Come on. Have I been here before? I thought Brady was, like, surprisingly hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like 3 lines, right? Shot in front of a green screen.
Yeah, but he had to do like a subtle, funny thing, and he nailed it, I thought.
Yeah.
If there's anything to be upset about, it's that, of course, this guy can also deliver in a cameo appearance. Screw him.
Yeah. Boy, this does kind of seem like the thing that, like, if this thing was real at all, it does kind of seem like the kind of place that you'd find him, doesn't it?
It totally does. Yeah. It's hilarious. I mean, I thought it was so funny on so many levels, and honestly, I thought it was cool that Brady did it from the, like, conspiracy theory angle, because he could have been weird about it. He is a weird guy.
Yeah.
But instead, he not only did it, I really thought he nailed it. I enjoyed that cameo very much.
If you don't know what we're talking about, the show's about I guess cloning, basically.
Yeah.
Is what you'd say. That's what happens inside this thing that looks like a rub and tug. You get cloned.
Yeah. Mostly without your knowledge.
And you sort of become like the idea is that you become a slightly better self, and they kill off your old clone.
Exactly.
But
technically, yeah. Slight spoiler alerts at this point, but they kill your old clone. They really just, like, gas him up big time and throw him in a plastic bag in the woods.
Yeah, basically. that part of the thing doesn't work with Paul Rudd, and his clone winds up living, and so then there are two of him. One of whom is happier and more evolved, which I think is going to be the basis for most of the conflict of the series. Now, you watched 3 of these, right? I only saw 2. So,
yeah. I mean, I think it's fun. You said you saw a lot of bad reviews and you weren't super excited about this. I really enjoyed it.
I did too. I did see some bad reviews and I wasn't all that excited about it, but I'm kind of in so far. I think Rudd is great.
Yeah, when is he not?
I think it's an interesting concept. It sort of seems like a pretty hard thing to pull off, and I'm curious about where it goes at this point.
Yeah, totally.
So, and you know what? The reviews have picked up. It's up to 83% on Rotten Tomatoes. So
that's good.
So I may have just run into the enjoyable show. Yeah, I would recommend checking this one out. And also, man, I really am starting to appreciate just the half hour format.
Yep.
Comedy, drama, whatever. Give it to me bite-sized and bingeable.
Yeah, man.
In this day and age.
Especially because, like, I'm sure you're the same way. 7 times a week, I make the decision to throw on something that I probably should go to bed instead. And if there's a 30-minute show in rotation, like, that's getting preference every time, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it does sort of, it just helps. It just helps, man. There's a lot to get through.
It seems so much, before you press play, it seems like so much less of a daunting task.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, for sure. Particularly if it's, you know, like a show like Watchmen, for me, if that was on Netflix and it was 12 one-hour episodes just dumped there, man, it would just, I don't know, it feel like a lot to get through.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, even though you sort of want to watch it. I wonder if any of these streaming services are going to kind of move away from this format for certain kinds of shows. Feel like it might be to some of their benefits, you know?
You mean to go to once a week?
Or yeah. Once a week, or maybe drop two at a time? Or, yeah, you know? Because it also does a thing for the... Right? I mean...
Hulu does some of that, right?
Hulu does do some of that, yeah. I feel don't you feel like Succession would be really different if it all just dropped 10 episodes at once? Like, the conversation around it?
Here's what I'm going to say. I mean, obviously, the most recent example of, like, wow, that would be totally different is Game of Thrones, right?
Yeah.
And I'm really curious to see if when all these streaming services, Disney is coming with The Mandalorian, the Bounty Hunter show, you know, Amazon has a Lord of the Rings thing in the works, I believe, these big epics... I think people, whether they'll say it out loud or not, actually prefer to have it week to week. I don't know that people want – I don't know that people want 10 Lord of the Rings movies basically all at once.
Yeah, it's hard for me to say because I feel like I need to put myself in nerd mind to figure out what people want about – You know, and it sounded shady. I didn't mean that with shade. Geek mind is probably a better word for that.
I'm not sure that's better, but go on.
But yeah, you know what I mean? Like, I can't imagine that anyone would want something that dense, you know, dropped in a giant pile like that, but I don't know, maybe they do.
I mean, I think they would say they do, but even if they do, I think the they that want that is much smaller than the they that can handle it one at a time, or the they that watched Game of Thrones. Like, if you're trying to get a Game of Thrones audience and not a Succession audience,
yeah,
I don't think you can do it all at once. It's super daunting if you're not, like you say, a super fan.
Yeah. I mean, some of that will be interesting to see. By the way, the rating for Watchmen was, you know, in the Big Little Liars range. So north of Succession, far south of Game of Thrones.
Yeah. But that's still pretty good.
Yeah.
And this is something that could pick up steam for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Although I do think that, you know, it's... You need to be in it. You know what I mean? It's not a show that you can watch real casually.
That's true.
Yeah. All right.
Although, to be frank, if someone had watched it casually, I'm not sure they'd have less of an idea of what's going on than I do.
That's true. I mean,
I assume my attentive watch will pay off at some point, but... so far, pretty tough either way.
My first viewing was the more casual of the two, and I just really I was watching it, was taking it in. I saw some things happen, saw some people die, but much past that, I was like, I don't know, you know. And it's one of those things where, like, I really tried not, you know, I mean, I try not to consume takes and content about this stuff before we talk about it because I want to, you know. I don't want to be just rattling off other people's opinions on it, and there's so much content. And I did wind up learning a few things around. And obviously, there's been a lot of talk about the 1921 Tulsa Massacre and Wall Street and Tulsa and all that stuff, which I think is actually kind of cool that some of that discussion is going on, because nobody really seemed to remember much about any of that. So
yeah,
so that was sort of neat and a very interesting frame for the show. All right, should we jump into Modern Love?
Yes.
Okay. That's,
how many of these did you watch?
That is a good yes. I watched two of them.
Oh, man, okay. I watched a third last night. And answer me this important question. What is the tier success rate for this show on you? Did you cry at the end of these episodes?
Oh, tier T. I thought you meant tier T-I-E-R.
No, T-A-T-E-A-R. T-E-A-R.
Dude, that's such a low bar.
Okay, agreed. But
as I've explained, I'll cry at anything. So, yes, of course. Of course.
But this was two for two. And what I'll say about the third episode without telling you anything more about it is, while very interesting and well done, if it's 29 minutes. At minute 20, like 6.5, I was like, I'm not going to cry in this one. And then they got me. I was like, there's no way, there's no time for them to build enough behind, like, the sort of thing that, but I am modern in love with Modern Love.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredibly charming. And there's some amazing people in it.
Amazing people, and they're amazing little love stories. And I didn't realize they were based on, like, I guess it's a column.
Yeah, it's a popular column in the New York Times, which I do not read. So
have you ever read it?
I have never read.
Understand like what it is?
So it's you know, I'm coming at this like Watchmen, and uh-huh. I have no concept of the source material. But I do feel like, unlike Watchmen, I do feel like after watching this that I have a pretty good idea of what the column is like.
Is it just? But is it like a letters from readers or?
I think it's stories.
You know what I mean?
About
like, is this
readers.
A pen of letters, but the PG-13 heartwarming version?
Dear New York Times.
Yeah.
I never thought this would happen to me, but. Oh, sorry. I got very nostalgic for Penthouse Forum there for a second.
I never actually read it, but it just seemed like the right reference. I wonder. Yeah, man. I mean, I'm curious. Who are these, like. Whatever they are, they're really charming, really convincing, and real sorts of romantic stories that tug at your heartstrings and also like are genuinely like they genuinely make you feel good about the world.
Yeah, and you know the premise, right? You know, it's about love, but it's not necessarily about love in the way that you're sort of conditioned, right? It's all kinds of different love. You know what I mean?
The third one is really, really, I'm telling you. Oh, man. What a thing.
Yeah. Well, the fourth
one.
It's
not quite what you would expect, and it's just, and I'm saying this about the whole series. It's just not quite what you would expect, but it really comes through. Like a dear friend who always comes through. Like, I don't know how to explain how wonderfully endearing this show is.
All right. The fourth one is written and directed by Sharon Horgan. So I'm
very excited for that.
Pumped for that.
Just like three for three in every respect. I this gets three thumbs up from me.
Yeah. And an easy watch too. You know what
I mean? And again, 30-minute range.
Yeah. And that wasn't even necessarily what I was referring to. They are short, but it's just, you know, it's charming, you know? It doesn't require, it's not like it doesn't demand your attention, because it does, but it doesn't require you to be quite so locked in, I feel like, something like The Watchmen. And
it's much less demanding than something like Watchmen.
Yeah. You know, it's a nice little dessert, nice little TV dessert.
Yep.
Jenny Slate.
I want to know what you think of this. I can't watch this reasonably.
Interesting. I enjoy Jenny Slate as a performer, and I was going to say person, but I guess it's probably more persona, really, since I don't actually know her in any real sort of way. I had never seen her as a stand-up, and
like I said, I don't think she's done a lot of stand-up per se.
Yeah, and that's kind of the vibe I get from this stand-up special. Is that
it is? Know? It's like stand-up special plus weird documentary thing.
Right. The stuff with her family and her like personal life to me was vastly more interesting than the joke segments. You know what I mean? I think she probably could be a really good stand-up. There's a large amount of evidence that she's an extremely funny person, but I did not think the stand-up bits worked.
She's an extremely funny person and not a great stand-up comedian. I would agree with all of that. I am so enchanted by her, whatever it is.
Yeah, you sound very enchanted.
What?
You're like, I'm delighted and enchanted by her, I don't know, whatever thing she does.
No. I mean, whether you want to call it her personality or persona or what have you, like, I think she's so wonderful. That's why I say I can't watch it objectively. She makes me laugh no matter what.
So did you find this a delightful hour and change?
Pretty much.
Okay. So you're just all.
I understand all the things that you're saying. It's unfocused. She literally at about the 10-minute mark is like, before we begin.
Yeah. That was one of the better jokes, actually.
It was, but that is the whole vibe. She is self-aware and bizarre, and again, an extremely funny person without material that necessarily, for the most part, most of this material does not necessarily stand up on its own as stand-up material.
Yeah, she could have workshopped this set a little bit. I feel like.
I think part of the point of this, for better or worse, was the vibe of like, this is what you get. I can't workshop or nail this down. I am this is me. Take it or leave it. It had that vibe, did it not?
Yeah, a little bit. But oddly enough, like I will if this is like I'm all in on her, I would take her, but I don't want to take this special. So that's
totally.
I will say, and I forget exactly the joke that she used to describe it, but hell of a pantsuit though.
A tuxedo, but for ladies who want to move, I think. And again, like, very bizarre, very distracted sort of stand-up set. But I think that was the aesthetic she was going for, even if it's not your favorite.
Yeah. Well, and she starts kind of getting into her massive stage fright. I was like, well, that makes some sense.
Yes.
That checks out. I can't even imagine what it's like to do Saturday Night Live with massive stage fright issues. That seems
insane.
I can't even imagine the terror that must be.
I have some pretty significant stage fright when it comes to actually performing something in front of people.
Yeah.
Like, one of my favorite things to do is karaoke, but I am afeared every time I step up to the microphone.
You're not like a private booth karaoke, or are you?
Not by myself.
Okay. Well, yeah, right. But I mean, like, you're performing for the room usually when you're performing, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of the like booth karaoke in the Bay Area, so I have done it a handful of times with groups of friends over the years. Probably about the same amount I've done big room karaoke, but no, big room is what I'm talking about. Yeah. Like, and honestly, even in a pretty small room, like, I if I feel like I'm shaking. And I've been told I don't actually shake necessarily when I feel like I'm shaking, but it's still, I feel it every time. Even though I know I like singing and once it's going, I'll enjoy myself. That's why I keep doing it. But stage fright's a weird thing, man. It's a, yeah. You know, it's a weird anxiety thing.
How hammered are you when this is happening?
I don't know. I don't drink that much.
Yeah, but I feel like karaoke is not meant to be sober.
I have a couple drinks at karaoke, but yeah. I just like to sing. I don't need to get wasted.
All right. No, it's not. You don't need. It's not really wasted. It's in fact, obviously, you can go too far in that, but you want to get a little bit loosened up. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah, you lube it up a little bit before you sing. But I'm just saying, like, I still. In the same way, if I don't know, like I haven't been on stage in that many other contexts in the last decade, but radio is really effective dissonance for me.
Yeah, and this is one of the things as radio talent, right? Like,
yep,
you know, we get extremely used to talking to large numbers of people in a like live setting without a net,
right?
And then you get to that point where you, you know, you may do something where you actually have to see the people, and it's like this whole
totally different
whole other level. Yeah. That took me a while to sort of figure out, and then eventually I did, and now I'm not super bothered by getting out on the stage. I feel pretty comfortable.
Well, good for you, pal.
But yeah, it's only reps. It's kind of the only way to do that.
Yep.
The bigger places actually help because you really only have the eye vision to see a certain number of people. You know what I mean?
Totally.
And if you're in like when I've been on stage at like Shoreline or whatever, like there's a giant light shining in your face, which actually
you don't see
helps a whole lot, you know?
Totally. Yeah. I see, that's the problem with a karaoke room is like it's just big enough to be a disturbing number of people for my anxiety and small enough that you can see all their faces.
Yeah, you can see all their faces. But it's such a low-pressure thing, right? Because
it is.
10 people who were terrible went up before you. You know what I mean?
Right. And I keep doing it, and I enjoy it. But that's the weird thing about stage fright. I mean, I think that's what Jenny Slate sort of kind of tried to explain in one of the more interviewee segments of the show. And I thought, you know, another thing I think you kind of said is, like, it was interesting, the interviewee portions about with her family and with her.
Yeah.
So even if you didn't love the stand-up, I think there was stuff for you here. But if you're like cruising Netflix for a super quality stand-up special, this is probably not it.
Yeah, particularly. Yeah, like if you're looking to just kind of like put something on with a group
I
of friends
watch someone
and cackle
tell some jokes.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like that's probably not this. But that's okay. I don't know that that's necessarily what she was aiming for.
No, yeah. I definitely do not think that's what she was aiming for.
Yeah. I'm now sad that we haven't karaoke'd. So we're going to have to correct that at some point.
Oh, yeah. I love it.
I know some spots in the bay. So.
I mean, I know all the spots in the bay. What's your favorite Bay Area karaoke spot?
Well, there's one in the East Bay called the Melody that's like super old school. That's really fun.
In El Cerrito.
Yeah, and then oh my god, now I'm blanking on the name of the one in Japantown, but I could tell you exactly where it is.
In Japantown.
Yeah.
It's not private rooms?
It's not private rooms. And it's
I don't think I do know that one.
Yeah, and it's really great.
I know the Mint, I know Encore.
Yeah, I mean the Mint I've been to. Yeah, it's not that for sure. It's in Japan.
You know, Encore is like on California near Polk.
It's in a mall. It's in like one of those, you know, Japanese malls.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, and it's really great in there. I like it a lot.
Good to know.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll do that someday.
Great.
All right, man. NBA is happening. So
did we get through all the TV stuff already?
Did all the TV stuff.
Look at us.
Yeah. That's we gotta keep it moving. Both you and I got things to do.
Damn right.
So season tipped off last night. It's funny. I saw somebody on Twitter that the four highest scoring players last night were Pascal Siakam, Kawhi Leonard, Fred VanVleet, And I believe Danny Green. I want to say Danny Green was the fourth. It was four Raptors.
Yeah, Danny Green had like 28 or something, I want to say. Watching these games, boy, so many things happened. First of all, I thought it was hilarious that the totally denuded season opener went to overtime so that TNT didn't broadcast the first like 10 minutes of Lakers Clippers.
Yeah.
Like the Raptors without Kawhi versus New Orleans without Zion. Tune in, everybody.
Yep.
Oh, here's some more. Yeah. What's that you say? LeBron is playing on TBS? Sorry.
Yeah, it's like you punt that overtime over to True TV, right?
I thought that was funny, but really competitive, exciting, fun game. I mean, went to overtime. Guys on both squads impressed. I'm not super thrilled with Brandon Ingram. He loves putting the ball up. But I think both of these teams, and, you know, when you're watching New Orleans and it's some dude named, like, Melly playing where Zion should be in the fourth quarter, man, I'm not convinced New Orleans isn't a playoff team if he gets back sooner than later. The 6 to 8 weeks is tough, though.
Well, look, the strength of New Orleans this season, other than the Zion stuff, obviously, is depth, right? Like they got a lot of players for sure.
A lot of solid, like capable NBA professionals.
Yeah,
a lot of them young, but guys who are clearly belong in the league. I don't know how many stars they have outside of Zion, but they got a lot of guys who can do a lot of things. And yeah, I think that's a really interesting team. Alvin Gentry's a good coach. He's got a tremendous defensive coordinator now with Bezdelic.
Yeah, that's an intriguing pairing because obviously, you know, Gentry's known for the offense.
And he is very nearly as creative and respected an offensive coach as Mike D'Antoni. So I agree. It's a very intriguing coaching combination.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to have to overcome their Dukeness. Let's just be honest about this.
Of course.
There's just too much Dukeness on this team.
And here's the other twist of that game. I said before the game yesterday, I was talking to someone at work about he was filling out like one of these goofy surveys of predicting the postseason awards before the season starts, you know?
Yeah.
And he got to most improved and he started listing the normal type of candidates who are going to get more playing time, who, you know, are coming off an injury, that sort of thing. Yep. And I was like, this is weird, but if he really takes the next step, Pascal Siakam could be a back-to-back most improved winner.
He's certainly going to have the role growth.
And if he plays like he played last night, I think he does win the award.
Yeah.
Because he was the guy. Kyle Lowry had a, you know, Kyle Lowry-esque dud. And I like Kyle Lowry, but he turns these in every now and then. And Siakam went to work, man. And yeah, he ended up fouling out. The refs are still in preseason mode. But he absolutely stepped it up a level. Now, can you do that for a whole season? That's a much different ask. But boy, if you're a Toronto fan and you're trying to figure out how you remain a playoff team this year, but more importantly, a competitive team in the long run, because Kyle Lowry and Marc Gasol are not going to be here for long, whether they're traded this year or not, they're not going to be here for long. Pascal Siakam being a you know, top 15, top 20 player in the league is one way to remain competitive. Yeah. Immediately.
I mean, I think that's always what you were counting on, right? It was like, well, we're going to build this thing around Siakam and see what happens.
Yeah, but that, all I'm saying is through one game, the early returns are real good.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I can't it doesn't feel like a surprise. I agree with you that he could be most improved player. I watch out for Sabonis on that score, right? I think he's going to have a lot of opportunity this year, especially if
The Miles Turner thing is still weird. There are an interesting number of teams who have some potential super big combinations, and whether they are able to use them will be very interesting.
Yeah. What is writ large? Is the biggest thing, you know, in the NBA, the biggest narrative in the NBA, is it mystery? You know what I mean? That for the first time in a while, no one really has any idea who the title contenders are going to be. Is it, you know, superstar pairs are the new thing? Is it, you know, the league is shifting a little bit back toward size? What's the big narrative in your mind?
I mean, I think it's everything goes in cycles and waves. Everywhere, all the time, everything in life. And sports is no different. The run game was out of football last year, and then all of a sudden this year, run games and defense is pretty much how everyone's winning who's winning. The big man was a dinosaur, and now you've got three or four of the eight best teams who could throw monstrous big lineups at you.
Yeah, I mean, how weird was it to see the Lakers running everything through the post last night?
Yeah, and by the way, Kawhi and Paul George are wing players, but they're also very large men and do a lot of work inside. And Zubac, look, he may not be super effective come playoff time, but they're going to play him, and he's going to get buckets. That's what that guy does. That's a big team too. I was thinking watching the Warriors in the preseason. Well, they're playing the Lakers, and the Lakers really are probably one of, if not the biggest teams in the league, at least in the West. But then you watch the Clippers with Harrell and Zubac, and you know Kawhi is such a beast in the paint. And then the Bucks are big as hell. Philly is huge. There's four, at least those four teams that can really, I don't know how teams like the Rockets and Warriors are going to deal with it, quite honestly.
Yeah.
So that to me, and Denver can get huge on you too.
Sure can. I was just thinking about them.
Utah, not quite the same way, but boy, am I excited to watch that team. I mean, I just think, boy, the Western Conference is so crazy competitive. And, you know, in a weird way, the East is too. I think Philly and Milwaukee are way ahead of everybody. But 3 to, 11 is a lot of interesting things. The Chicago Bulls, I think, are pretty clearly should be looked at as a playoff team. You know, in the 7 or 8 range.
I mean, look, I get why there's a lot of excitement.
Let me make a point, because okay. I would say the same. Orlando's another example of the same thing, right? Orlando is looked at as a team. In fact, they made the playoffs last year. I think a lot of people look at them and say, young team, up and coming, a lot of talent. They should be in the playoff mix at the bottom of the conference, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if I ask you, how crazy is it if I told you Orlando ends up third? It's an upset, but there's not a clear enough third team that it's totally bananas. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I think third is up for grabs. You know, I wouldn't say Orlando is generally in the pool of teams that are talked about, but it's not insane. Would you say it was insane if Atlanta finished third?
No, I don't think they have that level of talent. I don't. I think the Bulls and the Magic are a year or at least a year ahead of Atlanta.
Right, see, I put Atlanta in the group. That's to me that's the tier of those teams.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that's fine too. I'd be a little more surprised with Atlanta. I don't think they're quite as talented. The Bulls and Magic are both really deep with talented players.
Yeah. By the way, not projecting Atlanta third, just to be clear. Sorry.
What's that?
Not projecting Atlanta third. Just saying I think there's
going to be. And I'm not projecting the Bulls or the Magic to be third. But I am saying from 3, and to your point, let's throw Atlanta in there, from 3 all the way down to about 11 is relatively variable. It's not nearly as good as 1 through 10 in the West, but it's just as topsy-turvy.
All right, so
and that to me is fascinating.
What playoff teams are you that didn't make it in the West last year are you putting in and then which playoff teams that did make it last year are going out.
Let me see if I have this right. I believe so. The Lakers I've got in.
Yeah, I mean the Lakers are kind of the given there.
And the Spurs I've got out. Hold on. I got to remind myself exactly who was in last year. So, all right. In the Western Conference, I have got the Spurs out and the Thunder out. And the Lakers in. And this is where it gets super interesting to me. I would have put in the Pelicans, but I think I'll go with the Mavericks.
Really?
Really.
Yeah. See, to me, it was Pelicans or Kings, I think, were they.
The Kings are there, too. Yeah. But Pelicans, Kings, Mavericks would have been playing for that. Well, frankly, the Warriors are in that group, too. I'm more confident that they'll be in, but they're in that group.
That was my next question, because I've seen a number of people, the Ringer crew, most of the Ringer crew, because KOC's high on them, but Simmons and those guys and Zach Lowe predict that the Warriors miss the playoffs. And my initial reaction to that was indignance and you're drastically underestimating Steph Curry. And I've gradually come off to that, to the point where I'm now actually pretty worried about them. So where do you sit? What's your guesstimate on what their seed is at the end of the year? And none, obviously, is an acceptable answer.
Seven.
Yeah, I don't know where the defense is going to come from.
Correct, but you have to imagine the Kings, Pelicans, or Mavericks being better than them.
It's certainly possible, yeah.
Or Spurs, I guess. And I just don't – I think two of those teams would have to be better than them for them to miss the playoffs entirely. And I just trust Steve Kerr, Draymond Green, and Steph Curry too much to believe that's going to happen. So that – I mean, but I don't believe any of those people are underestimating Steph Curry. I believe they're underestimating the effect that – more Kerr and Draymond, but Curry a little bit can have on the other guys that they don't think of as serious NBA contributors. Glenn Robinson III is going to be their starting small forward on Thursday when they play the Clippers. That's a tough matchup with Kawhi Leonard.
It is, yes.
But Glenn Robinson III as the Warriors starting small forward in between Steph Curry and Draymond Green, I think is going to be a better Glenn Robinson III than anyone has ever seen. And I think that's the part that's not necessarily being properly credited by people who are saying they won't make the playoffs. But of course, I could be wrong, and that's a razor's edge. This effect that I'm talking about is questionably real. I mean, not questionably real. We know they make guys better, but it's very questionable if it's enough. And it might not happen. So I am picking the Warriors to make the playoffs because of my faith in those guys, but I don't think it's unfair to pick them to be 10th. I really don't.
Yeah, I don't either. And I think honestly the case for them making the playoffs, to me, like, I know you kind of made it more articulately, but I do really think it could be as simple as a team that if Steph Curry is indeed playing at high Steph Curry level, that should be enough to make the playoffs alone, even in a loaded West. We're just talking about getting a top eight seed.
You got to put Draymond on that too. Yeah. And look, D'Angelo Russell.
I'm not saying
have to
that
good.
Those guys don't matter. You know what I mean? Like, no, that's not my point. But
what I'm saying is, if they're going to make the playoffs without Klay Thompson, Draymond matters almost as much as Steph.
Yeah, I just mean
he's going to have to be his best self on defense all year long, every night, and that is not easy to do.
Yeah. I mean, he's
at all for anyone.
The idea of, and I don't, you know, I don't know about Curry and Russell together, how much they're going to, you know, but like that is, that's going to be a tough back, you know, defensively, that's going to be a real challenge.
Correct. For them, Russell's got to be better, and they've got to score a bunch, but they will. So yeah. It's going to be interesting. And that, to me, is, to answer a much earlier question, that is the 2019-20 NBA season. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah. Well, and
who are you picking to go to the finals? If I make you pick, I think it's as open as any year and as silly as any year to predict finals teams without seeing this stuff at all. But, and I'm gonna pretend I didn't see last night because it didn't necessarily support the position I was going to take. Who do you have in the finals?
All right. Well, I have one team winning it all. And I'm pretty clear on them in the finals, and that's the Philadelphia 76ers.
I love that pick. I'm not sure. I am definitely putting them in the finals as well. I don't know if I'm going to pick them to win. In fact, I know I'm not, but I'm definitely putting them in the finals.
And some of that is just because I'm so definite on that I think they're going to make the finals. You know what I mean?
Correct.
That they, to me, then clearly had the best odds. But the other thing I just think about them is they have a chance to maybe be one of the greatest defensive teams ever.
No doubt.
Like they, and I think playoff wise, that's really going to suit them.
They put out a lineup that is as big and defensively suffocating as pretty much any lineup that's ever existed.
Yeah. It's scary. And then if you're asking me today, I'm going to take the Clippers in the West. Just because
Did you watch last night?
I didn't see a ton of last night, but I definitely watched some.
So they
looked
great.
Paul George didn't play. So.
Yeah, it's given that Paul George didn't play and Kawhi looked like the finals was yesterday and he was ready for game 8. This doesn't sound as good, but I think the Lakers are going to win the title.
All right.
I just, as incredible as Kawhi is, and I think we probably have to say he's strictly a little bit better than LeBron James one-on-one today. LeBron is still one of the two greatest players of all time, but today I think I'd rather have Kawhi. I just can't get past when LeBron and Anthony effing Davis figure it out. I think it's going to be completely unstoppable, even more so than what the Clippers can do.
It's impossible to make a negative case. You know what I mean? Like, you can't make the case that, the Lakers can't win the title. You can't do it, right? So,
No, you can't do it for the Lakers. You can't do it for the Clippers. I don't think you can even do it for Denver or Utah.
Yeah. I like
what has to come together for Denver and Utah might be a little more complicated, but you can't tell me those teams aren't in it.
Yeah. I mean, look, and I might take LeBron and Davis, you know, over Kawhi and Paul George in a game of 2-on-2. Although I will say, there's no other team that's going to throw out two guys who can legitimately, maybe neutralize is a strong word, but contain LeBron. Yeah. And I think that's going to be a big advantage for them.
And it
could be three if they could, wind up with an Iguodala trade before the end of the year. Or a Covington trade or something like that. But I do think I just like the organization and infrastructure around the pair in the Clippers better than I do the Lakers by a significant degree. Whereas I think the some advantage for the Lakers is probably more marginal. So
maybe I just and you're right. The Clippers supporting cast is better and. Based on what we saw last year, I probably should trust Kawhi in the playoffs more than I trust Davis or LeBron. But I just can't get past even though they lost last night, watching those two together, I can't get past. They're going to figure something out.
I'm putting zero stock almost in this whole first month. And in fact, I think the thing that maybe I'm looking forward to the least about this NBA season is going to be the early narratives.
Yeah.
Least a couple of these new teams are going to kind of, Miami Heat it, where they, start 8-10.
Mm-hmm.
And
the Heat are another team, by the way, in that mix from 3-11 in the East.
Yeah. And there's just going to be a lot of bad, dumb stuff written about guys. Can they make it work, not make it work, some of that stuff.
I think in the East especially. In the West, a lot of these stars have some faith. They have some goodwill built up. As crazy as our take culture is, there are going to be those takes, but everyone is going to come with an associated, the other guy on the show being like, chill out, you know what I mean? But in the East, conclusions about these teams are going to be drawn so fast, and the entire, like I said, that 3-10 or 11 range, I'd have to count it to tell you exactly. But that thing could be at one place 20 games in and could be totally upside down by 60.
Yeah.
It is, because teams are going to be able to go on crazy winning runs against other Eastern Conference teams. If a team, that's sort of my point. If a team like the Bulls or the Heat or the Magic or the Hawks gets hot, they can just melt through an East Coast road trip or something and totally flip the standings. It's going to be a weird year, and I am fired up.
Yeah, and look, and this is true about any season, but I think health is really going to play, going to inject some randomness into this equation.
You can't really talk about it because there's no way to predict it. But if we're honest, that back end of the Western Conference playoffs is going to be determined by who can stay healthy.
Yeah, and maybe the front end too. Honestly,
It's hard to imagine the Lakers, Clippers, Nuggets, Jazz. I can't imagine any of the Rockets, any of those five. It's hard to imagine them missing the playoffs.
Yeah. No, I'm not talking. When I say the front end, I mean
the order
what's gonna happen with the front end.
Of those five, and then the order and whether you make the playoffs of the next five. Within those groups, they're gonna be injury.
Yeah, the Lakers, a significant injury to one of two Lakers dramatically changes that team, doesn't it?
Correct. And I'll say this: I think the Rockets might win the conference in the regular season.
That was my next question: was scale of 1 to 10, how surprised would you be if Houston is your Western Conference finalist?
Zero. Oh, Western Conference finals?
Finalist, yeah.
Like if they go to the finals.
Yeah. If Houston
shocked.
Wins the West,
shocked. But if they're the one seed, it's a zero.
Interesting. I mean, they're another team. I think it's going to have to figure it out.
A zero if they're the one seed, and a 10 if they play in the title in the championship.
Yeah, they do have the guys, probably the two stars with the most playoff questions. On the same team.
They're not going to be able to do it in the playoffs, but I think they're going to win a ton of regular season games, and they're going to be pretty fun to watch. I think Russell Westbrook, if Russell Westbrook can't make James Harden fun to watch, nobody can.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. The James Harden not being fun to watch thing, and I say this as a person who doesn't find him that fun to watch, some of that's on us, right? Isn't it?
No.
As viewers?
No.
I mean,
not at all.
I don't know.
No. It's on him. I guess it's not on him, but it's on him in as much as that's not something, and I guess it shouldn't be something that's a priority, but it's not.
Here's what I mean by that.
He eschews the aesthetics of the game.
I think the question of whether you find James Harden watchable or not is more of a question of strategy than ability, isn't it? Right?
Yes. So,
that's kind of what I mean, it's not on him. He's executing a strategy that the team is, I'm sure he's involved in, but the team's laid out. You know what I mean? So,
no, he's executing a strategy that he's laid out, I think.
I don't know. I think that's drawn up by D'Antoni and Morey as much as Harden. Okay, we could talk basketball for months. And
we
probably
literally
would.
Could, yeah. Yes.
So we should probably wrap it here and jump into homework.
Yep.
Lot of stuff happening this week.
Yeah. Did you write it down?
I did, yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, look at me. growing and improving. Kaminsky Method returns this week. We're not doing we're doing Kaminsky Method. We're not going to do BoJack Season 6, but I'm going to mention it here because you should watch BoJack Season 6.
Yeah.
You, collective you, not the Kolsky you.
Yeah, maybe if we have extra time the following week, I'll give it a shot.
Silicon Valley returns this week on HBO, along with Mrs. Fletcher, which is the Catherine Hahn kids are out of the house, I'm going to get freaky comedy. There's a movie that actually dropped on Netflix last week that somehow escaped us called The Laundromat. It's directed by Steven Soderbergh and stars Meryl Streep and Gary Oldman, and I think that's all that needs to be said about that.
Yeah.
And then a movie coming next week to Netflix called Dolomite Is My Name. I guess I should say this week, rather. It's coming in a couple days.
I hope it's this week. You said it was Friday.
Yeah, Friday. It's coming out Friday. That stars Eddie Murphy. And sounds amazing. And
yeah, it does.
And we're going to check that out as well. And that's going to be a lot of stuff to watch because I'm going to be in Vegas and not gearing up to watch a lot of Netflix.
What are you doing in Vegas?
I'm doing what you do in Vegas.
You're just having a Vegas weekend.
I'm gonna eat a lot.
Watch some football.
Drink a lot, probably, and watch some football and some soccer and some basketball.
Nice.
And gonna go see Tom York and
okay.
And General Merriment.
Sounds great.
Yeah. So should be a good weekend for me. Somehow I'm gonna have to work all this television in the middle of it. But you know, we suffer for our
art. Around the edges.
That's right. That's right. Anything else you need to add?
All I got is bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.